Good evening. You're listening to Outsources, a KGNU Boulder Denver program that brings you stimulating and thoughtful perspectives on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. As always, I'm pleased to be here with you for another episode of Colorado's only regularly scheduled LGBT-themed radio show. And I'm especially excited to speak with tonight's guest. I think we are all painfully aware of the hazards of growing up and coming of age transgender or queer in American culture. Folks in the LGBT community seem especially prone to family rejection, emotional codependency, an unhealthy relationship with sexuality, alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide, and general self-loathing. Navigating an at times fraught emotional world filled with judgmental parents and friends whose acceptance is often conditional can lead us trans folks into self-harming and self-hating behavior. I think we've all met trans and queer people who seem like the proverbial life of the party, only to discover later that they are not as happy or fulfilled as they might appear on the surface. And if growing up trans isn't difficult enough, imagine adding the unsettling experience of being an immigrant to the mix. With me on the phone to talk about her experiences as a trans woman and as an immigrant, one who has just struggled with codependency and substance abuse, is Dahlia Husu. Dahlia is the author of the recently published book, I Am Woman, Surviving the Past, the Present, and the Future. Within those pages, Dahlia is honest and vulnerable in telling her powerful story of transition and working through a range of issues. Having heard her on Kaya Kramer's The Queer Life podcast, I just knew I had to get Dahlia on Outsources. Some queer lives just command my attention, and I think Dahlia's will command yours as well. Welcome, Dahlia, and thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on Outsources.
Thank you, Angela. I'm so thrilled to have been invited to be a guest on your show.
It's great to have you.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this.
Starting out, I'm wondering if you might tell our listeners about the genesis of your book, I Am Woman. Why did you decide to write it, and what was the impetus behind actually putting that project together?
I decided to write the book for, I guess, two reasons. One, you know, which is a selfish reason, I needed healing. I mean, I needed to really purge the many feelings that I was harboring. There was a lot of emotion from the many things that I've experienced, good and bad. And writing for me serves as a remedy or a way of cleansing myself, right?
Okay.
So that was one of the reasons why I began writing. The other reason was obviously because I felt a need to share something with the world. I thought that my story would be able to help other people like myself, other trans folks, and people who just don't understand the trans experience overall.
That kind of gets me into my next question about goals. So your goal was to reach both trans people and non-trans people regarding trans lives and what it's like to be trans? So you had more than one audience in mind?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to just limit the story to, you know, targeting the LGBT community or the trans segment of the community. I think there's a lot within our stories as trans individuals that the world needs to be aware of. So I saw the opportunity to reach an audience further than just the LGBT community. We know ourselves pretty well, right? And we tend to kind of, you know, the trans community supports itself. And we see that a lot, you know, online. There's a lot of groups dedicated to LGBT people or just the trans segment. But I think that the rest of the world, there's a big portion of the world that is completely oblivious to the realities that we face. So that was probably one of the biggest reasons why I wrote the book, you know, and I still hope that my book continues to reach that segment, the people who don't know what it's like to be trans or who just don't understand it or who judge it.
Before we get any further, where can folks buy your book? Is it available on Amazon? And do you have a website where our listeners can learn more about you and your work?
Yes. My book is actually available through the Amazon website. It's available in paperback and in Kindle format. So you can definitely go onto Amazon.com and type in I Am Woman, Surviving the Past, the Present, and the Future, and you can find it there. You can also find it through the Barnes & Noble website. In the UK, it's available through Waterstone, which is their major retailer, like a Barnes & Noble in UK. Or you can visit my website, which is www.dahliahusu.com. And that's spelled D-A-L-I-A-H-H-U-S-U.com.
Thanks for spelling that out, since you have a little bit of an unusual spelling of Dahlia, but thank you.
Yeah.
I wonder if you might take us back to the beginning of your story. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? It wasn't here in the U.S., is that right?
Correct. I was actually born in 1979 in Dominican Republic, which is neighboring Haiti. I was born in the capital, Santo Domingo, I was born in the most dangerous sector of the capital, which is called Capotillo. At the time, it was an extremely violent place. If you ever seen what like the slums of Rio de Janeiro look like, it's very similar to that, very underdeveloped. It still is, you know, to this day.
A lot of poverty and
yeah.
A lot of poverty and violence.
And violence, correct. You know, there's a lot of violence amongst the people, obviously, but also, you know, between the government and the people. It wasn't just the people themselves, even though there was a lot of murder taking place in that sector of the city, a lot of theft and drugs. But there's a lot of violence also, you know, the government against the actual people. The corrupt government, it's been corrupt for as long as I've known. So there's a lot of things. It was just scary. There was always some type of upheaval going on.
Mm-hmm. There was a particularly powerful story I remember early on in the book where you talked about someone robbing, I think, your house, and nobody wanted to call the police because that would have just made it worse. It's very applicable to these days in the U.S. with Black Lives Matter and police brutality. That story seemed to just work for today in America in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that day clearly. You know, at that point, for example, my grandmother's house, I lived with my grandmother. She raised me until I was 8, and my mother was abroad, you know, trying to work, because we were very poor, so she would send us money. So at that time, the house that we lived in was just kind of like a shack, you know. It wasn't very secure. That night, somebody broke into the house. And I remember, you know, we had no walls in the house. It was just like a big box, mm-hmm. you know. And my grandmother separated the rooms in the house by just, you know, hanging up curtains. And I remember seeing the shadow pass through the transparency of the curtain of this intruder that was in the house that morning. Or late that night, excuse me. And that was a scary moment. You know, I was probably maybe 4 or 5, you know, I can't remember my exact age, but my family sprung out of bed, and at that moment, everybody grabbed their machetes, because that was what folks did. They kept weapons underneath their beds in case of something of this sort happening. My uncles ran out, you know, after the intruder, and my grandmother ran out also, and I was petrified. Things got better after that.
Well, you mentioned your mother a moment ago, and from reading your book, your mother was and continues to be a looming presence in your life, even in her recent relative absence. How would you characterize your relationship with her? She seemed to be a problematic character all the way through your story.
Yeah, you know, I think that I love her. I love her dearly, I do, but we never had a relationship where I felt trust in her, or she scared me. She was very disciplinarian. She was a disciplinarian, very strict, and that was the basis of the relationship. You know, she came into my life as a mother when I was 8. So when she left me in the Dominican Republic, she left me in my grandmother's care. So I had a bond with my grandmother. That was my mother. Although my mother came to visit every so often, once a year, twice a year at most, she would come to the Dominican Republic, you know, and bring things, you know, for the family, clothes, toys, medicine, things like that. But I never had a bond with her. And then when she came full-fledged into my life at the age of 8, she brought me to the States because she had remarried.
And she married an American.
Right. Yeah. She married an American. And because of him, I was able to come to the States. He adopted me at that point as his son in the state of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she immediately forced me to call him Dad. You know, from day one, you know, on the airplane, she was telling me that I had to call him Papi. Papi is the term we use in Spanish for dad. And it was very awkward because I didn't have a father figure. You mm-hmm. know, my real father was not even in my life. He left when I was born. So all of a sudden, you know, I meet a stranger, now I have to call him Dad. And that's how she began, I guess, training me to be the son that she wanted me to be. She was very, very strict in everything, you know, and extremely forceful and physically, you know, at times violent, I want to say, because some of the treatment that she subjected me to could only be described as violent. It was discipline to her in her eyes, and she thought she was doing the right thing, but it was very extreme.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. Today we're speaking with Dalia Husu. Dalia is a transgender woman and immigrant from the Dominican Republic who has recently published her memoir, I Am Woman. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning. Getting back to your mother, who you characterize as you had a difficult time with, who definitely didn't show you unconditional love or emotional support. In what direction or directions did you think that your relationship with her led you in your life's journey?
I think that because I didn't have a supporting relationship with her. I didn't have a relationship where I can go to my mom, you know, and trust her with my feelings and issues and all the things that were going on with me, because there was a lot going on with me. I ended up seeking approval elsewhere, or seeking kind of acceptance and the love that I needed from her. I ended up seeking in the wrong places. There's tons of examples in my book of where I searched. You know, I looked between people who were also lost, who were resorting to drug use. You know, those are the type of people that I resorted to and became friends with. I got into violent relationships, verbally and physically abusive relationships, just seeking that approval. And I think most of my life, up until I was like maybe 34, 35, that's how I lived, you know, just making the wrong connections with the wrong people. And I think that stems from not having a loving and nurturing relationship with my mother.
So you were desperately seeking to fit in and find approval from others.
Yes.
And alcohol and drugs were a way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, and even let me just say this, even religion, which I talk about in the book, was a way that I coped, or because later on, you know, as you read the book, you start to see the I search for God, right? I search for like a higher power to validate me or to make me feel love or acceptance. So I got into various different religious sects and groups looking for that as well, way before I got into drugs, way before I got into abusive relationships. So that kind of...
Because you were in a fundamentalist church in like your mid to late teens, is that right?
Yes, I was. I was in the Pentecostal church until I was 18. But, you know, all throughout those years, I started attending the church when I was 14. And I was, you know, preaching, and I was there preparing me to become a pastor and all of that. But inside me, I was struggling with my, obviously, all the feelings that I was feeling as far as my sexuality and my gender identity. I was going through all these different things. You know, I was really fighting with myself all the time internally. I guess I turned to God because I didn't have anybody else who I can turn to in my family at that point. You know, my mother wasn't there for me. I was living with her when I was 14. I moved out of the house, and I ended up moving to Miami to live with my aunt, who had recently moved to Miami as well. One thing led to the other. It was just a progression of things, from religion, then into the nightclubs, then into the drug use. It just spiraled from there, you know?
And anonymous sex and...
Yeah, promiscuity, all that craziness. I mean, and, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. So, mentioning sex, you also talk about in the book that you spent a relatively brief period doing sex work. How did that come about? And in the book, you express regret for having moved in that direction, however briefly.
That came about much later. That happened when I was 28, 27. You know, I transitioned when I was 27, but maybe a year or two later after my transition, I had graduated from university. I landed a job in New York, and it was my first big, you know, paying job as a manager in a waxing salon. So I was thrilled and excited, you know, to move to New York, but things didn't work out the way I wanted to, and I was highly stressed out. I ran into a friend in the city after losing that job. It was someone that I knew from the nightclubs in Florida. He was a stripper, and he was also an escort. And he guided me into the direction. You know, I needed work. So he suggested, well, I do this for a living, so I make a lot of money. Why don't you do it? Do it at least for some time. You know, when he suggested that, I was kind of disappointed that he actually would suggest something like that to me. And I started questioning whether I should continue that relationship or that friendship. But I needed to make money, and I just listened to the wrong advice.
Because you had left, the job in the waxing salon, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I had left that job. You know, we just couldn't come to an agreement there. So I left that job, and at that point, you know, New York is a very expensive place to live. So I took his advice, and I began escorting. As a result, then I got arrested in Chicago while we were out touring. We were planning on touring the country from city to city. And that experience for me was life-changing because I never even thought about doing anything like that ever again. Even when I was down and out financially, and most of my trans girlfriends were, you know, doing it. And of course, you know, they're wearing the best clothes, the best shoes, their hair's done, their nails are done, they're driving, you know, nice cars, and they're traveling. Even when I was just, you know, at my worst, after experiencing that, I never looked back. I never, you know, that for me was one of the most degrading experiences of my life.
I'd like to, you know, just add that the way you described that scene where you're debating whether to do it and do the sex work, and then you start doing it, and then the arrest scene, it was just really, you wrote it really powerfully. You wrote it with, I really got a sense of, in the arrest scene, the terror you were feeling and being hauled off to jail. And in just in general, I think you write with a great verve and power and emotion. And it really came through in that scene how, and me, maybe it's me being a trans woman, made me feel it a little bit more. But yeah, really well written book and that scene in particular.
Thank you.
Sure. I also wanted to ask you a little bit more about the queer community's relationship to alcohol and drugs and your own relationship to alcohol and drugs. And I got the sense from reading your book that there was no discrete point in your life where you quote unquote hit rock bottom with substance abuse. It seemed like it was more of a process for you in your life. Is that true?
It was a process. I mean, I can't say that I... You know, it's a gradual process, a long process of over, you know, 10, 12 years of just, you know, indulging in cocaine and alcohol. But I didn't hit rock bottom like a junkie would hit rock bottom when you think of, you know, someone that's on the streets because they have no control over their use of alcohol and drugs. It was more of an emotional rock bottom for me. You know, I just continued living day to day in the same pattern. You know, I'd get up and I just thought at one point, because I was working in the clubs at that time as an MC and as a showgirl, you know, I had reached a point where I thought that was my life. That was it. I was destined to live this way because I'm trans. I didn't think there was any more for me. And that was it. So, and this is what we did because we're trans. Or because we're, you know, LGBT, we go partying, we do drugs, we drink. That was my understanding. Distorted as it is, that's how I understood things to be. And that's how I lived. So when I hit rock bottom, it was more of a realization that I had been living my life, just wasting my life away, you know, wasting my opportunities and realizing that I was wrong. This is not all there is to it. Being trans doesn't mean that I have to be a showgirl who goes to work every day and needs to have a bag of Coke in her purse in order to get through the night. Or, you know, there was more to it. And I kind of woke up. And at that point, I just let everything go. I let everybody go. I let my apartment go. I let my car go. I just let everything go. I could not hold on to anything because I felt like I just needed to completely be free. I didn't know where I was going. I broke all my associations with all my friends at the time, just disappeared. I needed to restructure everything, restructure my life. That was the beginning of a new process. And that's how the book came about, because at that point, I just said, I don't care about this life that I'm living. I need to build the life that I want. So I started doing that. That was the beginning of my transformation, into becoming a writer, an activist.
And I just want to ask you, do you think your experiences as an immigrant or as a woman of color influenced your thinking about how narrow your life's set of options were at that time when you were partying and being a showgirl?
To a certain degree, I think, yes, because the only thing I could think of right now, coming from being, very poor in the Dominican Republic, when I think of my family and the way that I grew up was that, the women portrayed that the men were the ones who were the money makers or who were, the providers. So maybe I have that wrong ideology.
Yeah.
I'm tongue-tied. Ideology in my mind. So I think that in the back of my mind, that was sitting there, that, there just aren't any opportunities for someone who is maybe, an immigrant or trans or LGBT to really move forward other than within the LGBT community. Because that's what I really believed. I thought that, I had to make it within my community. I wouldn't be able to make it outside of it. And I was scared to step out of what I knew, of my comfort zone, even though I was miserable in my comfort zone. but I was more afraid of what was outside of that. How would the world perceive me? What would the world think of me? And would I even have a chance out there?
And I would imagine as a Latina immigrant, a lot of the hardline rhetoric, that anti-immigrant rhetoric that's flying around these days from Donald Trump and others, I'm guessing that's hard for you to hear. And in the Pulse nightclub shooting, most of whose victims were queer Latinos, must have been difficult too.
So, yeah, the Pulse shooting was actually really upsetting for me. I wrote a poem for them, which I posted on my website, and I was really saddened by it, just incredibly. Like, inside of me, it was like such sadness. I couldn't understand. I knew people who knew people. I didn't know anyone personally, mm-hmm. but I knew people who knew people. And through social media, when I was reading the post, I was like, wow. Saddened me so greatly that I had to write about it, and I wrote an article about it too, which was actually published up in on outnewsglobal.com in UK, because I contribute to Out News Global. Now, Trump is another issue. And very honestly, I think it's sad that there's still people who who have views or who even agree with Trump's immigrant views. I don't really pay much attention to him because it's just a waste of my time.
Mental space.
That's where I see it. Yeah, it's just that's going to upset me, so I don't even bother with Trump. But, the Pulse thing was really something that struck a chord in me. Could have been anybody. Could have been anybody that I've known because, working in the nightclubs, I knew so many people. And could have been anybody that I knew. I thought about that. I was like, what if I knew someone personally? Not that makes it any less tragic. It was beyond real. It was surreal.
Well, do you have any upcoming writing projects that you'd like to mention in closing or any closing thoughts?
Well, I am actually working currently on my book. I'm translating it into Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Because, as we said, I feel like the Latin American community doesn't really have something like this that they can read. For example, like Janet Mock came out with her book, Redefining Realness, which right. is a phenomenal book. And we have a lot of trans folks who are now, you know, living visibly, who are out in the media, who are doing great things. But we don't really see that within the, you know, the Latin media or within our community. So being Latin myself, I decided that I need to translate the book into Spanish and get it out into the Latin market. So I'm working on that at the moment. And I'm also working on a second book, which is fiction, but it's based on trans and LGBT lives, that we have lost along the way, including some of the Pulse victims and people like Leah Alcorn and other victims who've either died because of suicide or who were, you know, who were victims of violence. So I'm writing right now a book. It's a short story, a book, collection of short stories, but based on those lives.
Great. We've been speaking with Dalia Husu, a trans woman who's recently published her memoir, I Am Woman, Surviving the Past, the Present, and the Future. In that book, Dalia charts her transformation from a poverty-stricken youth in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, to a self-accepting trans woman who has vanquished her demons and is living out her dreams in the United States. Thank you so much, Dalia, for being on Outsources.
Thank you, Angela, for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Great. Well, please stay tuned for our events and announcements section.
Déjala tranquila, entretenida con su juego de pasión, que a mí me está gustando. Me encanta su estrategia, que me va enamorando. Tiene mucha gracia y manifiesta su conducta a perfección, que es lo que anda buscando. Me intriga con su magia, ella estará tramando. Todo lo que sube tiene que caer, y de una vez mi corazón y alma le entregaré. Es como un sueño del que no despierto, y por eso déjala que siga, yo la agarro. Al negar que no he perdido la razón, si estoy descontrolado.
Mark your calendars. Join Out Boulder County and Under the Sun Eatery and Pizzeria for a special Give Back Tuesday on October 11th to celebrate National Coming Out Day. Under the Sun will be donating 10% of sales from 4 to 10 p.m. to a local nonprofit every Tuesday, and they've picked Out Boulder County to spotlight for this event. We hope to see you for some delicious food and drink while we also support the critical work of Out Boulder County. This event will be held on Tuesday, October 11th from 4 to 10 p.m. at Under the Sun Eatery and Pizzeria at 627 South Broadway in Boulder. Do you have an employee resource group at your workplace? Are you thinking about starting one? Join in on this opportunity for local businesses' LGBTQ employee groups to connect with each other and community organizations. Participants will introduce their group and share some background on its goals, activities, and resources. Introductions will be followed by a happy hour mixer at HAPA. Please RSVP Marty at mmoore@outboulder.org. If you have any additional questions or cannot come on this date, please let us know how we can assist you in your work. The event will be held at HAPA Sushi at 1117 Pearl Street in Boulder on September 28th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Thanks for listening, and please tune in next week for another exciting episode of Outsources.